Our main speaker tonight is Joe.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. My name is Joe Stevens, and the fact that I use my first and last name will show you that I've been around for a while. In the big book, where it makes suggestions as to sharing at AA meetings, it's often misquoted. It does not say, we share what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now. It says, we share what I was like, what happened, and what I was like now. And I'll try to do that tonight. I was a very, very confused, disturbed little boy. They tell me that I was abandoned by my birth mother 5 minutes after I was born because I was in the way of her sleeping with men. But God was there. God has been in my life from the very, very first day. There were three women that lived across the street from my mother, and they raised me, and they loved me, and they nurtured me, and they coddled me, and they spoiled me. And at 2 years of age, they gave me up for adoption, because that's what they did in those days when the children were not your own. And I was adopted by two loving, elderly parents. And after having been raised by these three women and put into a house with two complete strangers, you can only imagine what I was like. I was an emotional mess. And I grew up the way I grew up. I was a sissified little boy. My adopted father was not really athletic, and there were no men in my life. And I know now that I was gay. I mean, and back then that word hadn't even been coined. But I started drinking. I started drinking when I was a teenager. And I started drinking with a bunch of friends in a restaurant where they sold pizza and beer to underage boys. And I loved it. I had the one symptom of alcoholism that is so common to others, and that is that once I started, it took an outside set of circumstances to stop me. I could not stop. I did not want to stop on my own. You know, either the crowd that I came with to the bar was driving the car, and if I didn't want to walk home, I would have to go home with them. Or the bar closed. Or the stupidest thing was, I can remember drinking with my friends and someone said, let's go get a pizza. I thought, a pizza? What are you talking about? You know, the bar doesn't close for 2 more hours. And I was one of those alcoholics who had to drink myself out of all the excuses that I was using for my drinking. I was introduced to... I became a school teacher. I was sober enough to get a degree in education and to start teaching. And that's something I'd wanted to do since I was a little boy. But it was only to last a year and a half. A year and a half into my teaching, I was arrested in the same town I was teaching for driving under the influence of alcohol, failure to grant the right of way to a pedestrian. What actually happened was I drove my car up on the sidewalk in order to get the attention of a young man who was walking down the sidewalk. I mean, please. And at that time, I was still living with my adopted parents, drinking around the clock, and they literally didn't know what to do. They called the Veterans Hospital in West Haven, and the Veterans Hospital told them, we don't take drunks. And so what they did was they got the family doctor to come and bring the papers, and they signed me into the local mental hospital in Newtown, Connecticut. And they locked me up in a ward with senile old men. And, I mean, God was working here, too. Because one night a nurse came through that ward, and she said, there's going to be an AA meeting in the cafeteria. Would anyone like to go? I would have gone to a snake charmers meeting to get off that ward I was on. And I went to that AA meeting, and I remember it to this day. There were two speakers, a man who almost burned himself to death in a shack in his backyard. The family wouldn't let him live in the main house, and he lived in the shack, and it went up in flames, and he almost went up with it. And the woman was taking her clothes off someplace in the middle of the street. And I thought to myself, my God, what a fascinating group of people. Isn't it marvelous that they have a club like that for those people? Because they need it. Which, you know, neither of those things had happened to me yet. So I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I actually started going to some meetings in Connecticut. As I said, I had to drink myself. I had all kinds of excuses for drinking. I wound up on the New York Bowery in 1966. And I no longer had the excuses that I had had. I couldn't use my parents anymore. They were dead. I couldn't use my employment. I was unemployed. I couldn't use relationships. On the Bowery, you don't have relationships with anything but a bottle. And all I had to show for 36 years of life was an empty wine jug in my back pocket. And God was there. Because on a rainy Saturday night, where I couldn't even find a dry cigarette butt on the street, I walked outside of a church on the corner of Broadway and 10th Street. There was an AA sign. And I thought, if I go in there, somebody will give me a cigarette. And I went in there, and somebody did give me a cigarette. But they not only gave me a cigarette, they gave me a life. Because a man came over to me after the meeting and said, would you like to do something about your drinking? And I, through the grace of God, I said yes. And he drew a map on the back of a meeting book to show me how to get from the Bowery Flophouse where I was staying over to the Perry Street Workshop. And I got there that next day. And miracle of miracles, nobody was more surprised than I was. I began to stay sober a day at a time. Those beginning days are still very, very, very clear in my life. They were very, very simple. I just put one foot in front of the other. I can remember walking from my Bowery Flophouse over 8th Street to the Perry Street Workshop and passing an outside cafe, and there was a little old lady sitting there drinking a martini, and I thought to myself, my God, if she can drink a martini, so can I. But I was well trained by AA. My feet kept moving. They had told me it's not where your head is, it's where your feet are. And I began to stay sober. And, you know, 6 months after coming into AA, I was teaching mathematics in a private school on the Upper East Side. Talk about miracles, you know, a day at a time. I was very, very active in AA, very, very active down in the village. The village meetings, God put me in those meetings too. And he put me in those meetings not only to be sober, but to learn how to be a sober gay man. Because the meetings were filled with gay men who were sober. And not only had I never communed with any other gay men, except for illicit sex, but, you know, I learned. But 21 years after I was sober, I picked up a drink. I was still active in AA. I was still attending meetings. I was not attending meetings that anywhere near resembled the Atlanta group. I was attending meetings where people whined and those kind of meetings. And I didn't have a sponsor. My sponsor had died 8 years previously. He was one of the first people in AA to die of AIDS. When we went through those early 80s, it was very, very, very rough. People were dying all over the place. I remember saying to somebody, I'm so tired of going to memorial services, I wish somebody would get married. And but that was the way it was. But you know, as far as I know, not one of those people, young men in their prime of life, sober in AA, picked up a drink. You know, and I was able to get back to the program, and I was able. I had a couple of other relapses. I had some problems other than alcoholism, and I had to go into another 12-step fellowship and into therapy in order to look at those problems. The wonderful thing about AA is that we can find whatever we need to find in order to stay sober a day at a time, in order to work the spiritual program of this fellowship. I had my last drink almost 20 years ago. I just want to give sustenance to my sponsor, Barry McNulty, whom many of you know, who helped me so much to stay sober. Barry was wonderful. He was just so simple. I remember the first time we sat down in the coffee shop, and I had just had a relapse. I was just out of one of the first detox, one of the last detox classes in St. Vincent's. And we sat down in this coffee shop, and I started going on and on and on and on and on and on about what had happened and why. And he put up his hand, and he said, "Stop." I said, "What?" He said, "Stop." He said, "All I can do is try to help you stay sober a day at a time. All those things that were behind your relapse, you can take care in therapy. You can talk to people at meetings about it. Other people have been through what you have gone through. And you're not unique." And he laid out a program for me. He said, "What meetings do you go to?" And I gave him a list of my meetings, and they were the same as the kind of meetings I told you before. Whining meetings and meetings where people just talked about their problems. Meetings where people did not talk about a solution. And he said, "Okay, where is the step meeting? Where is the big book meeting? Where is the beginner's meeting?" And he got out the meeting book and circled those meetings for me and said, "These are the meetings that you're going to start to go to." My sponsor was one of those people who actually told me what to do. And I mean, everything he told me was from his own experience. But I used to say to Barry, "You know, I have this problem that has no solution." And he'd say, "Joe, no. You have this problem that defies the solution that you're trying to apply. You need to find another solution." And he would tend to begin to tell me what that solution was. And if he didn't have the experience, he said to me, "What I want you to do is I want you to go to a meeting and raise your hand. And as briefly and concisely as possible, mention what you're going through and ask if there's anybody in the room that has ever been through what you're going through before, and then shut up." And somebody always came over. I mean, this program is amazing. Just utterly amazing. I retired from teaching in the private schools, and for 15 years, I did substitute work in the New York City public schools. And believe me, that was an experience. But I have my program. I mean, I was a daily meeting attender, and everything that has happened to me in sobriety has happened because I'm sober and because I'm in recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous and because I have these principles to practice every day in my life. I some of you know, I was diagnosed with lung cancer a couple of weeks ago. I have a tumor in my upper right lung. And Barry was right there. As soon, I did pick up a phone to call somebody else. But Barry was right there, and Barry was saying to me, Joe, you're going to do exactly what your doctors tell you to do. You're not going to diagnose the problem. You're just going to do what they tell you to do. And I get my care at the Veterans Administration. And the Veterans Administration here in New York City, I'm happy to say, is superb. I mean, the care they give me is phenomenal. And I did have chemotherapy last week, and I have another chemotherapy session tomorrow. And I'm I have a radiation treatment therapy next week. So I'm doing exactly what my sponsors tell me to do. But most important, I'm staying sober. A lot of you know God arranged for the fast break meeting to move into my building. So I have a meeting to go to every single morning at 8:15. And there's one at 7 too, but I go to the 8:15 meeting. And I've missed it a few days recently because I was just too sick to go downstairs. But that meeting is there. And, you know, my primary care physician said something very interesting after I was diagnosed. She said, eventually, Joe, you're going to have to make a choice between quantity of life and quality of life. And I smiled. I said, I've made that decision already. I make that decision every single day. You know, with the story I've just told you, I mean, I was supposed to be dead years ago. And so were you. I mean, I've heard a lot of your stories. And another thing my sponsor used to say is every seat in AA is filled with a miracle. And that's true. And I'll just tell you one other thing. You know, there's a statement in the big book that says we absolutely insist on enjoying our lives. And despite this lung cancer, I'm going to continually insist on enjoying my life. Before the lung cancer, I was doing acting and modeling work. And I'm 85 years old. And I just want to tell you one story. A couple of years ago, I did a commercial out in Long Island for an organic T-shirt company. And my costume in the role that I had was a pair of red tights, period. And I was using a hula hoop. And I was riding on a bicycle built for four. And when that commercial was over, the people that did the commercial with me actually applauded my performance. But then, lo and behold, I saw something begin to go around in the circle. And I thought, I wonder what that is. I didn't wonder what that was. I knew what it was. You know, it was it was coke and I was able to let the pipe pass me by because I knew that if I took one sniff of that coke, it would be all over. My active addiction would be right back again. And that was the last thing in the world that I wanted. I just want to close by saying how much I love this group. And I love this group because it's the kind of group that was formed by Bill and Dr. Bob and the early members of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a group where people talk about the solution and they don't talk about the problem. And they talk about how fortunate we are and how grateful we have to be to have God in our lives. And I thank you.
Maybe you could get a